And so for the royal, for the French monarchy, for the Capetian kings of France, this was a PR disaster that really affected their position of running their great peers in France. Above all, in 1152, the divorce went through. Eleanor divorced her husband, Louis, and then promptly turned around and married perhaps the most brilliant prince of the age, and man considered a number of years younger. He was in his prime. He was just, what, he was 18 or 19 years old. Henry II, Henry Plantagenet, who was heir to the throne of England. And as I mentioned earlier, Henry was also related to then a reigning king of Jerusalem, Baldwin III. But most important, his father had been Count of Anjou. He was Duke of Normandy in his own right. He was overlord to the Duke of Brittany, Count of Maine. He had a connection with the Count of Flanders. And within 18 months of that marriage, Henry II assumed the throne of England under an arrangement that had been conducted earlier. And as a result of that marriage, the vast domains in southern and central France, ruled by Eleanor, were now united with the most powerful peer in France, who also happened to sit on the throne of England. And Henry II and Eleanor ruled as a splendid couple, the couple out of romance, the greatest monarchs in Europe since Charlemagne. And everyone knew it, and they knew it. And they kept a brilliant court. The marriage was tempestuous, brilliant. They were never bored with each other. And in the meantime, the Capetian king in Paris, Louis VII, looked dull by comparison. He was eventually forced into an alliance with the Counts of Champagne and conducted a second marriage. But for the French kingdom, this was a disaster. And henceforth, the leading monarch of Western Europe was no longer the French king. The king who had, for the last 50 years, acquired some sort of overlordship to the princes of Outremer, but the great king across the seas, Henry II, who undoubtedly was regarded as the greatest king of Christendom. Repeatedly, crusader princes sent their appeals to Henry, who ruled his kingdom ruthlessly from horseback, spent more than two-thirds of his time in his continental domains, visited England only on several occasions. England was essentially for him a source of income. Henry spoke French. He was a product of that whole North French civilization and regarded England as just one of his many different titles, even though he's associated with the formation of the common law. Henry II, as the great king of the West, sent out subsidies. Large numbers of English silver pennies traveled east, the so-called penny struck on the pound sterling, 92.5 fine, and it was the vast sum of English coins that poured out of Northwest Europe from Henry II in his subsidies to Jerusalem and later by his son Richard on the Third Crusade that actually established that silver standard in the Near East, and English coin would be one of the most common coin being used in the Crusader world for the next generation. Henry also encouraged prominent vassals of his to go on pilgrimage, if nothing else. And there wasn't any sense of urgency that Henry himself should take the cross, not until the catastrophe at Hattin in 1187. And so, at least from the viewpoint of Paris, and it's hard to speak of Westminster as Henry II's capital because he moved around so much, and England, as I said, was his most important in some ways, but the least favorite domain of Henry. But in any case, the two great kings of the West were not in any urgency to raise crusader armies and go east. And as the crisis passed very quickly in the East, they weren't encouraged to do so. Should be noted, at the Battle of Hattin, the great battle in which Saladin was to defeat King Guy of Jerusalem, 200 of the 1,200 knights were actually paid by Henry II. He had a continual subsidy that just went out. It's known as the Saladin's Tithe. Later on, that is one-tenth of the taxable property of the nobility and clergy and other taxpayers should go to support Jerusalem. Well, what about the other great monarch who went east, Conrad III, the king of Germany, who would like to have been known as Holy Roman Emperor? Well, I mentioned earlier that Conrad III faced a difficult problem in establishing his control over Germany and northern Italy. There were all the complexities of the investiture controversy, the strained relations between papacy and empire. In some ways, it was hoped that the crusade would improve the relations between Holy Roman Emperor and Pope. Unfortunately for Conrad, that was not the case. And above all, Conrad came back with a really tarnished reputation.